Okay, so we'd like to thank everybody this evening for joining us. My name is Melinda Garish, and I am the owner of Cutting Up Stables. My husband and I are out in Shirley, Indiana, and we appreciate all the questions that keeps coming in, and we're getting to those as soon as we can. Karen, we've got a really full lineup of questions, but I got an email from you today, and I thought, let's address this at the beginning, if that's okay. It's got some really exciting news. Karen's just released her Fix It Today series. If you've not looked at your email yet, this is really exciting. You can go on her website. I have seen Karen do some of these things, and she does fix it in a day. Her technique is a really good approach. I've seen the one with the paste warming. I've seen you do the needle shy. There's actually a series of six different ones. Karen, do you want to talk a little bit about what you've got out there now, and it's just some really exciting stuff that's come out?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I'm really excited about it. It's almost, you know, if anybody's put videos out or a book or anything like that, you know, in your mind, you think it should take this long, and it ends up taking years. And one of the reasons that series has taken so long is because we shot different problem scenarios all over the country. So my husband was on the road with me for a couple of years there, and when we'd come across a horse that pulled back or was needle shy or something, we would just, you know, grab the camera. And so you'll see horses in this video series in Colorado, in Arizona, in just all over the place. And we're really excited about it because there's so many people that they really get along pretty well with their horse. But there may be a behavior, say, take needle shy, that you don't have to really deal with on a daily basis. And so we don't know what to do with it, so we tend to let it go. And then the veterinarian comes out, and you know there's going to be a big spider hassle, and you just brace yourself twice a year during vaccinations and, you know, get it done. And hopefully you don't have to, you know, do something on an emergency basis. And so what I find when I do my clinics is that I'm always doing something with a pullback horse or needle shy or ticking or something. And when I show people what to do, you know, or in a demo, and I'll ask the audience, I'll say, raise your hand if now that you've seen it and heard the explanation, you feel like you can do it. And I'm so pleased when people just instantly raise their hand. They go, you know what, I can do that, because now they know what to do. So, you know, I always felt that when I left the clinic, I felt like, you know, there's so many people that could get that kind of help if, you know, some videos were available. So we really took the time, like on the pull, on the needle shy or pullback, you'll see several different horses. So you don't tend to watch it and go, oh, well, that's just, it just worked because of that one horse. It wasn't that bad. That horse wasn't like my horse. I guarantee you, these horses are really the ones like I got excited about and said, this is the perfect one to shoot because it was so extreme. So this series is available for people, and it's everything, paste warming, like I said, kicky, needle shy, pullback. It's a whole series, and we're going to be expanding. We have several, quite a bit of footage for different problems, like difficult to bridle, difficult to mount, picking up, preparing the feet for the farrier, preparing the horse for the vet, things like that. There's more titles that we're also going to be producing here. So that's been my goal. And if you've seen my videos, my DVDs, you see me talk about this library of videos. And this is the beginning. So I'm really, really excited. This has been a long time coming. I really appreciate everybody's patience and understanding and how long it can, you know, take to produce this. But I'm just so excited to think that people will be preventing some really serious injuries and problems to both horse and human because they'll know how to resolve it before they have to face it. Inevitably, you have to face these problems, and you might as well be proactive and be able to, you know, prevent that. That's really safety with horses, is prevention. It's not in knowing what to do when all heck breaks loose. It's that too, but there's so many things that you know, we've all heard the stories, different scenarios where if people knew what to do, that injury or even death maybe could have been prevented. And if this series prevents one, you know, life from being lost, it's absolutely worth all the energy and effort that's been put into it to produce it. So I'm really, really excited about it. So.
Okay. And the topics we've got, if you've not seen them, is the de-spooking and then the needle size, ticking.
And clipping.
And clipping, and then pullback, and then pasteworming. So those are the ones that are out right now. And you can go on Karen's website as well as her other DVDs and her videos and get those. So, well, thank you, Karen, for getting those out. And I know you've had a lot of hard work. And we thank Mark, too, because I know he's been in the background working on getting those done. So, okay.
He really has. Thanks.
So, okay, well, the topics for this program tonight is slowing a fast trot, spurs or no spurs, get a canter from the ground, micromanagement, and rushing back to the barn. So, and you know, Karen, as we're going through looking at the emails and stuff, I think you could probably develop a video for each one of these and have them out. So just keep that in mind.
I have to mention, too, that these teleseminars kind of stems as a supplement to this library of problem-solving series. Because I felt like, you know, people needed the help, and so I made the teleseminars available so people could go, well, you know, I watched your videos, but I'm not seeing this specific problem. So, you know, people can send an email in and ask these questions, which is great. But if you've heard my teleseminars, you know, I'm sitting here going, okay, how do I explain this in such a way that you can picture it? And I feel that I'm fairly effective. I get really great feedback from the teleseminars. But if you could just plug in a DVD and watch it, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. So that's another kind of background piece to the teleseminars.
Okay. Well,
you're right. Future titles.
Yes. Well, and as we look through the questions, you know, there's a lot of people out there having the same issues with their horses. And so the good news is you're not alone in that issue that you have, and there is help out there. So, okay, this one's from Mary, and it says, I'm thinking about Karen's telling us that once the horse is doing something we ask them to do, they should keep doing it until we ask them to do something else. And I got this lesson on the ground. For example, when circling DJ around on a lead line at a walk or a trot around on a lead line, but I just realized, pathetic as it is, it takes so long to sink in, I really miss the message while riding. When we're trotting, if I ask DJ to do a nice slow trot, I tend to hold the reins tight the whole time. It works, but now I see that I should not be doing that. He would become lighter if I got him into a trot and then let him go loose and loose the pressure on the reins. Of course, when I do so, he speeds up. It's a lot harder to concentrate on getting the timing right and letting go while posting and zipping along at a trot on a trail. Any tips on keeping my horse in a slow trot without hanging on his mouth the whole time? Thanks, Mary.
Yeah, that's a really great question. And, you know, this is another video series that we're working on is the next stage. You know, we've got the foundation stage DVDs, but then it's advancing. So in the beginning, when you and your horse, you know, are in that you know, renegotiating the agreement, and the agreement is keep doing what you're doing until I ask you to do something else. So in the beginning, if your horse is trotting, just leave him alone. You know, he's not cantering, he's not walking, he's trotting. You've got to first be able to keep your end of the bargain. And I mean, it, you know, in the beginning, zero pressure on the reins. And that means zero, not a little bit. It means zero. Then this is the beginning stage. This isn't your finished stage when you're asking for it in a collected frame. That's another stage that you're going to go through. So don't think, well, you know, what about collection? That's going to come. But in the beginning, when you're helping the horse understand, that's their responsibility to not change gait, not change direction, to look where they're going, not act like a prey animal. That's the horse's responsibility. So you've got to prove to the horse that you're going to keep your end of the bargain first in this beginning stage. So, and this is actually going to apply to having your horse trotting. Is this the horse trotting slower?
Yeah. She's wanting it to slow because when she lets off of the reins, then he speeds up again.
Right. So when you go into an area, there's a neat little thing to think about. and different breeds of horses and different individuals within breeds have a propensity. So, you know, there's, if you think of long horses and short horses. So a long horse is a horse designed to go for long distances all day long. Arabians, you know, classical, you know, endurance horse, thoroughbreds, a lot of the gated breeds, you know, they're designed to go, 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 and go some more. And you bring them home from riding all day and turn them out in the field, and they're still going, right? But then there's other breeds that are short horses, which are draft horses, some quarter horses, not all. Ponies oftentimes will be short horses, horses that aren't really designed to go long distances. They can. They can certainly. Draft horses will work the field, you know, all day long, every day, but they're not the light, hot-blooded horse. They're more of a cold-blooded breed. So think of it this way. There's, and this will apply to, you know, having a horse speed up or slow down. Circles will shorten the hot-blooded horses, the long horse, and straight line lengthen the short horse. So a horse that doesn't want to go, you don't want to put it on a lot of circles, especially small circles, because pretty soon that horse that says, where am I going? They don't really want to go anyway, and you'll take a short horse and get them stuck. And that's a tough one to get a horse out of, to have them change that desire to want to go. Okay, that's a whole different topic. But you're right. I'm sitting here thinking of another title for a problem-solving series on this particular topic. I know. But what you want to do with this horse is go into an area that you can, you'd feel comfortable turning loose the reins and not touching the reins unless the horse goes out of a trot, you know, usually a transition up. So that horse on a loose rein can learn to maintain gait at a trot. Now, that horse may be trotting so fast that you're going, wow, we should be an endurance rider here. But keep your end of the bargain. Prove to that horse that if they just stay in the trot, I am going to leave you alone. I keep the promise. And it doesn't hurt us either to do long trots, okay, until the horse starts changing his mind about, you know, where am I going? So if you have access to a round pen or a small arena, the horse is doing a lot of turns or a lot of circles, pretty soon that horse goes past that same spot 472 times and he says, why am I going so fast nowhere? And they will start self-regulating their pace. Okay. So that's a really nice way to have a horse start realizing, you know, you're changing that desire to go. And if you don't go about it that way or don't feel comfortable doing that way, then what you do is what you're describing already. You end up kind of nagging them and nagging them and nagging them, you know. So, and then you're overusing the reins. So what I like to do in this exercise is just have that horse learn that, and if people may be even in this situation at a walk, because when horses feel a loose rein, oftentimes they don't know what to do. They go, but I've had pressure in my mouth my whole life, you know, when I got Pergunte. You know, he was, you know, used to that. He was used to pressure, constant pressure all the time. And so if you gave him just a little bit of slack, he thought, well, that meant walk, and more slack meant trot, and more slack meant canter. But it never released. There was never zero pressure. He didn't know what to do. He absolutely did not know what to do. So I had a big project on my hands with him just because he'd been ridden in that style for so long. It was just new to him. So remember, whenever a horse is faced with anything new, different, sudden, or abrupt, they're going to be uncomfortable because they're going to be a bit lost. So remember, it's that consistency that's going to build the confidence in you and the horse, and just set it up for success in a small area, like I said, and just get that right. Just get that to where zero pressure at a trot means stay trotting until I ask you to do something else, either transition up or transition down or stop, whatever it is that you decide to do. So get that first to where it's really nice and really solid and the horse really understands that they can just stay at a trot and self-regulate. I've seen horses, I can't tell you how many times, that just blow out of there. They get lost. I'll use Bergante as an example. He just looked like a whirling dervish, and he was just sure that he was supposed to go into a canter. He was just positive. And so I just bend him. I just tip his nose with one ring just slightly to the fence. I didn't crank him around or anything. I just did a nice transition down to a trot and quick gave him release again. But allowing the horse to make that, I want to say it's a mistake, but allowing the horse to make the transition either up or down before the response. So I'm not saying a mistake and a correction. Those are really common terms. But they have, you know, an associated emotion to it, too. Like, you made a mistake, and I'm going to correct you. Nobody likes to be on the receiving end of that, and I don't think horses do either. But if I allow the horse to make the transition, I didn't have it in mind, but I'm simply going to go through my steps, pick up a feel on one rein, tip the nose kind of to the rail, which just slows the horse down, then they kind of naturally transition down because they feel a little bit crowded there. As soon as they even start to make that transition, turn loose of that rein and give it back. Put it to zero pressure again and turn it loose and just stay with them. And the other thing, this kind of secondary effect that happens with this, is the person develops a better seat because the trot is the easiest gait for the horse and the most difficult for the human. So the more time you spend trotting with that horse, the more you develop that rhythm and getting in sync with the horse's movement. If you can ride the trot, you can ride just about everything, okay? That's the one to really spend time with. And it's the easiest for the horse. It's really an energy-efficient pace. That's why endurance riders spend a lot of time at the trot. So here's what will happen. Pretty soon the horse starts realizing, okay, if I just stay in gait, I get zero pressure, which they love. They recognize that. Then when that gets more solid and the horse starts self-regulating anyway, they'll start to relax into it, kind of slow down into it, drop their head just like they were out, you know, trotting across a field going nowhere in a pasture. And then you can start speeding it up by squeezing it or posting just ahead of the pace, just slightly ahead of the horse's motion. Or if you want to slow your horse down, you can post slightly behind the motion with more relaxation. So the horse starts feeling and responding and matching or mirroring the energy in your body when you're riding the trot, okay? And you can start going through the sequence. I talk about the sequence that you offer the horse. If you start slowing your pace down and relaxing more and the horse doesn't self-regulate and start slowing the trot down, you can slowly pick up your rein, slowly pick it up and tip the nose towards the fence just slightly, and as soon as they start to transition down, not quite to a walk, turn it loose again. So you can think about it this way. In the bigger picture, you're going to give the horse release when they're in the gait that you want. Walk, trot, canter, or gallop, okay? This applies to gaited horses as well. There's a million different names for different gaits of gaited horses. Then within the gait, you can start using that same principle. So slow, medium, fast walk, same principle. If you want a fast walk, you bring your energy up, you transition up, pick that horse up a little bit with your legs before they tip into a trot, release and leave them alone. Okay, same thing if you want a really slow walk. You can slow your energy down, pick up your rein, use your rein, and as soon as they start to transition before they go to a halt, turn it loose. So the horse, the game that you're using to interact with the horse is, I've taken your comfort away, now go find it, and then you hold it as long as you can. Does that make sense? It becomes more of a finesse or a second stage that you're asking with the horse. So in the trot, you would ask for a slow, medium, fast trot by the same way. You're either picking your energy up and asking for an upward, not a transition into a canter, but an upward transition within the trot, and then releasing that pressure when that horse is in a fast trot, or relax your energy if the horse doesn't respond to the relaxation, which by the time you've gone 472 times around then, they tend to want to transition down usually. There are some course, is again breeds and individuals within those breeds that take longer to get that idea of, you know, where am I going, you know, and why am I spending so much energy going nowhere. But I've not had a single horse, not one, that hasn't got that idea to where, you know, to me, what a horse, when they have true impulsion, a horse feels like your vehicle. When you put the gas on, it responds. And when you take your foot off the gas, it idles back. You see, we shouldn't have to be, what we're doing a lot of times with horses, with the reins, what you're describing, Mary, is you're describing like if you were driving your car and riding the brake all the time. You don't need to do that with a horse. Horses are so intelligent that they can differentiate those subtleties if we learn how to communicate with more subtlety. And consistency is the key to that. So hopefully that gives you some ideas, again, using that same principle of the release or the comfort is what teaches the horse what it is that we're asking them. And going from that stage, that very initial stage of just going, you know, basic gaits, walk, trot, you know, canter, gallop, now you're applying, using that same application to speeds within the gait. Slow, medium, fast walk, slow, medium, fast trot, slow, medium, fast canter. And then, you know, gallop is full out, four beat gait full out. But you can even, you should be able to accelerate that and decelerate just by taking the gas off. Okay. So I promise I'm working on more videos that might give you a better picture of that, but hopefully by that description you can kind of envision what I'm talking about. But what you're ultimately wanting the horse to do is to tune in to your energy in your body, and whether it's acceleration or backing it off, and then back to acceleration again. You know, that horse should feel like, you know, a finely tuned, you know, sports car, you know, not like, you know, the grandpa's old pickup truck, and at the same time, not a vehicle that, you know, if you don't ride the brake, you know, there's a little spring that pushes the gas pedal back up. When you release the pressure, you know, on the gas pedal, there's a spring that pushes that back up. If that spring were to break, that gas pedal just falls, you know, pedal to the metal. Okay, you'd have to be riding the brake or, you know, something. So if you can think of those things while you're riding, it's something that you're familiar with driving a vehicle, unless you're under age for driving, but, you know, it's something that you can relate to and you can find that feeling. That horse will give you that same feeling that a car does as well. That's your ultimate. I want you to get the picture of where you're working towards, and then you'll just chip away at that, and it'll get better and better and better all the time.
Karen, something you might touch on, too, is you talked about, you know, having contact with the reins and stuff, but what about your legs and your heels and stuff? Because I've seen people that just pedal with their legs as well, and I don't know if this is the same, you know, situation. She didn't say anything about that, but it kind of goes hand in hand with that pressure. Do you want to hit on that this evening at all? Or?
Sure, and that's in the Riding From Above DVD, the sequence that you want to offer a horse for transition up and also a sequence for transition down, those specifics in there. But when you're asking for a transition up, when I ask that horse to go, I'm going to bring it. I'm going to shift the energy in my body. If I want to go, I'm not just going to sit there like a, you know, a couch potato and go, you know. I've seen people do that, and we're going, where are we going? See, horses are keyed into the energy of other horses. So that's why sometimes people that are scared, you know, that old thing of, you know, don't let the horse know you're scared. Well, where that comes from is that the horse picks up on the energy of those around them. And so when we're frightened to a horse, that feels like you want to go. And so we tend to get on and our legs hang on and our hands pull back. And if you looked at anybody that, you know, rides racehorses, it's almost the exact same posture. And then the horse goes, which is what the person doesn't want to happen. And they go, what is wrong with this horse? And the horse is going, what is wrong with you? I guess this person really is in a hurry because I'm feeling that squeeze there. So when a horse makes that transition up or transition down, you can release without, how do I want to say this? You either want to release pressure or reduce pressure, okay? And that's a key thing for people to understand. A lot of times, because we talk and emphasize so much about the release of pressure, people just throw the whole thing away, okay? It's not that you throw the whole thing away, but if stage one is bring my energy up, so my body energy says trot, okay, which is active, okay? This is called riding, not sitting. So it's active. So if my body's trotting, that horse feels that, okay? Now, if my body relaxes into walking energy level, that horse can feel that as well. So I'm not going to use the reins to slow my horse. I'm going to use my reins if the horse doesn't slow. I'm not going to use my legs to accelerate the horse. I'm going to use my legs if the horse doesn't accelerate, if that makes sense. But we tend to skip that. We tend to use our reins first and kick them with our legs to go. And it's really interesting to me, you know, when a jockey, I mean, the fastest you ever see a horse go is, you know, Derby Day, right? But you don't see jockeys kicking horses. And there's no rule that says they can't. I mean, they can. They just don't, because it doesn't really work. The leg is to lift a horse or to move the horse laterally, okay? But if I lift that horse, where the engine is in the horse is in the hindquarters, okay? So when I'm asking a horse to go, my energy comes up. My legs turn into a squeeze. I turn my toes out. There's no kicking involved. I pick that horse up with my heels. And if that, there's still no response, the last stage in that sequence is to lightly spank the hindquarters until I get some form of forward, increased forward motion, and then I release that pressure. But I don't go back to sitting like a bump on a log. I go back to whatever the gait is that I'm, you know, that my goal is in that. So whenever the horse goes forward, leave them alone. Because if we don't, we end up kicking. I can't tell you how many times I had people in clinic, and believe me, I did this myself. It's what I was instructed. But they're pedaling that horse. It's exhausting. Because, and then when they quit kicking, they go, well, see what happens, Karen? And they quit kicking, and the horse stops. I said, well, that's just how the two, he understands you right now, because that's what you're doing. So let's just go through the sequence with consistency. I don't think they don't do it three or four times, and the horse says, I get it, and gee, isn't this so much nicer not being kicked every stride? You know, think about it from the horse's point of view. And then the person goes, wow, this is so much easier. I can just, you know, ride the horse instead of, you know, kicking every stride. It's just not necessary, but we're not told what else to do. I guess that's my entire program right there. We're just not given those options, and, you know, have a different technique offered to us that we can try and see that, you know, when people try a little different approach, the horse says, oh, thank goodness, and the person's, you know, equally pleased, because it's so much easier that way. But it's so common. I mean, that's the first thing you're told when you get on a horse. Horses are easy. Just get on, no preparation required, kick them to go, pull them to stop, you know, lean in the direction of the turn. I mean, that's what I was told first time I got on a horse. And I hear people, I was around a dude string not too long ago, and here's a group of people that don't ride very often, and here's the instruction, and it's going on. I'm not eavesdropping or anything, but I'm overhearing the instruction to this group of people, and that is the exact word still after, you know, 40 years later. This is still our initial instruction to horses. So, yeah, when people ask, you know, how my business is, I go, well, I've got plenty of job security, you know, just because it's just so common. It's just what we're told. So once you know a little different way to do it and you offer that to the horse, I've not seen a horse that doesn't not only respond very, very quickly, but also is extremely appreciative of a much, kinder, but a more sophisticated, more subtle communication from us.
Okay. Well, that's definitely a good topic for a future video. So, Mary, we really appreciate you sending that in, and good luck there, and we'd like to hear how that goes. So, Karen, would you like to go ahead and move on to another question then?
Sure.
Okay. All right. This one's a pretty simple question, and it's short version, I guess. The question is, spurs or no spurs? And this is from Sandy. So I guess she's wanting your input on whether to use a spur or not, or just some thoughts there, I guess.
Oh, you think that's a short, simple question?
Well, the question is, I didn't say anything about the answer.
Oh, okay.
I didn't say anything about the answer.
Okay. Well, spurs are, the use of spurs are like anything in the horse industry. Everybody has a slightly different opinion. But I'll give you mine. There is nothing wrong with, you know, spurs as long as there's education that comes along with it. Okay? The education of spurs is very few and far between, and I promise you that is a topic on a DVD because it is pretty extensive. Spurs are used to refine your communication. Okay? Refined is sometimes further down the road for people than we realize. All right? And one of the most common misunderstandings about spurs is that they make horses go faster. So we already talked about that with jockeys and use of legs. So imagine if somebody's kicking a horse every stride, and now there's a piece of metal on the heel, you know, banging into that horse's side. If we're taught to kick a horse and now we put a piece of metal on it, I mean, you can just imagine. And you know, you've heard extreme things, you know, horses being bloodied by spurs, and that does happen. It does happen, and I've seen it. But it's usually because the person and the horse, there's confusion, and sometimes, you know, there's a wonderful saying where knowledge ends, violence begins. But that does not mean that spurs are the cause of the violence. Okay, so spurs, probably one of the most common misconceptions is that the tinier the spur, the nicer the spur. The bigger the spur, the badder the spur. And it's actually the opposite. One of the things I really like to do at my clinic is I have spurs to refine the communication with my horse, and they're a large rowel, and they have many points on it, and the points are blunt. They're squared at the end, okay? So people see that and they go, ooh, bad spur. And then I have everybody bring spurs. And we, you know, it's one of our lunchtime conversations. And people, we have all kinds of different spurs, down to the tiny little English, you know, squared off at the end, but with no rowel. And people say, okay, those are the nice spurs. Those spurs of Karen's, those are the mean spurs. And I go, okay, don't say a thing. And anybody listening to this, you can do this yourself. Take the spur and just roll it up and down your ribs, okay? Just roll it on your skin. Just roll it up and down. And nobody says a word. I send spurs out, goes around in a circle. Everybody feels every single one. And every single time, people's faces are just blown away because the tiny little blunt spur that everybody thought was nice actually drags on your skin, and because it's flat and has an edge to it, there's this edge going bang, bang, bang on your ribs as you drag it. And then people take my spur, and because it's a larger rowel, there's a larger surface area, which has the same amount of pressure, but it's dispersed over a larger area. And because it rolls, there's no dragging across the ribs. And so it's simply to use a spur like what I use. If I need to touch my horse with it, again, there's no kicking. I've already trained my legs and feet not to kick. Okay, but I'll turn my legs out. My horse feels that pressure. If I need him to pick up and go, I might flick that like a match on his side if I need him to really move. And that's why I wear spurs, because when I'm riding my my horse during a clinic, to me, I'm like a firefighter, because anything can happen, and I need to be in a very precise precision moment sometimes to either prevent somebody from getting into a serious situation or get them out of it. So if I go along and people say, well, Karen, you shouldn't wear spurs during your clinics because people think that those are mean because they don't understand. And I say, well, that's the opportunity for them to understand. I'm not going to change what I do and in my mind put others at risk because of what people think. You know, that's a very chick thing to do. Believe me, I do it plenty. But it's too important. People's safety and lives and well-being are too important for me to go, well, I'm not going to wear those spurs because people don't understand them. If I need to, and I've been in situations where I have had to go Mach 10 and get somewhere to help somebody that's in a situation with a horse, then I need my horse to have that kind of precision because my horse is like any horse. He may be just looking at a butterfly that second, you know, and I go, hey, we need to go now. And it's very clear to him, but it's not a kick. It's not any of those things. He doesn't hold it against me. He doesn't go, hey, you didn't need to, you know, be so bossy or anything like that. It's just a higher level of refined communication, okay? So what spurs are for is to refine all these wonderful basics that you have. The problem that we have is when we're not taught the technique or the understanding or the education behind it, spurs are probably bits and spurs are probably two tools. There's others, but those are two tools that are very misunderstood and very misused. And that's my job, is to offer people a perspective because, believe me, I misused them. You know, I was given a bigger bit, you know, when my horse had trouble. You know, we put a bigger bit, we put a tie down on her, we did all these things. You know, I went to a place, I was desperate, you know, it's before I had access to the education that I kept continued seeking and finally found. But, you know, I was given gag bits and, you know, all kinds of devices, but it never, I could shut down the horse, but I could never change the desire. And so that's what we're talking about here is how do we develop that ability to interact with a horse at a high level of communication. And to me, there's no better feeling. There's no better aspiration, than to access the mind and the thought and the heart of a horse. When you win over the heart of a horse, you've really done something special because who do you have to be? How do you have to come across to really, truly win over the heart of a horse? And believe me, it takes more than cookies and carrots. I've tried. They love the cookies and carrots, but that's not what... what a partnership is. You know, that horse is not going to go in there and do what you need to do, whether that's have a safe trail ride or be safe with grandma or kids, or, you know, whatever it is. It's not going and jumping, you know, 5-foot fences. It's, you know, being thoughtful and mindful in everything that they do. So there's nothing wrong with using spurs as long as the education comes with them. And if you don't feel that you have the education and the understanding, don't use them. Don't use them. There's no, if you're not at that stage where you're refining the fine points of the communication, just take them off. Take them off. You really don't need them. Most people don't need them for what they do. But when you have the understanding, the education, they're a wonderful tool for refinement. Just like a variety of bits, spurs, all kinds of things, but it's having the right tool at the right time, at the right stage for both the person and the horse. Okay?
So Karen,
simple question but extensive answer. There's another title for our videos.
That's right. And just a real quick question, and we may have to just talk later, but, you know, I used the spur with Latigo and have an understanding there, and I'm starting a 2-year-old. Do I wait for that spur as I'm starting him for that communication or as that's go ahead and start riding him right now with it as I'm getting ready to start riding?
I don't know that you really need to, you know,
okay,
with young horses because that's kind of like, you know, taking your granddaughter and saying, okay, well, you know, we're going to be in calculus, you know, mm-hmm, here pretty soon. That's something to wait. You know,
okay,
it's not necessary.
So
you can. There are people that are very handy with horses, and they start colts. You know, they'll start 200-300 colts a year. I mean, that is what they do. You know, take somebody like, you know, not, I don't know whether he wears spurs or not, but take somebody like Martin Black. You know, Martin Black, that is his daily basis. And so he has the feel and the timing and the release and the refinement. You know, there's a wonderful book, and I apologize, I'm not remembering the gentleman who wrote it, but it's a wonderful book if you want to know about fit. And it's titled One Man's Opinion About Spade Bit. You know, and he talks about starting colts using a spade bit. And it's not cool because the man lives it. You know, it's a communication. That horse's mouth is not even touched. It's a signal bit. It's so refined. It's so subtle. So, you know, probably the number one rule in the horse and with horses is that there are no rules. It depends on so many different factors and then factors within those factors. And that's where what I really like to encourage people to do is to, you know, I promote independent thought. You know, think for yourself. You know, if you're under this condition in this situation, it might be yes. But under the conditions that you're describing, I'd say probably not. Does that make sense? That's why when you'd hear Mr. Dorrance talk, Bill or Tom, or Mr. Hunt, before he passed away, somebody would ask a question, and the first thing out of his mouth, and I'm catching myself doing it now, they'd think about it, and they'd say, well, it depends. And that depend is a big depend on lots of different things. So there's no one answer. There's no one formula. I wish there was. I had, you know, a group here, a clinic here recently, and I'll tell you what, they were like, you know, Xeroxing notes from my videos because they wanted the instructions in a, you know, laminated thing and all this stuff. And I was like, you know, okay, I will put that out for you when somebody comes out with that for raising children and interacting with children. You know, it's that same kind of thought process that you're going to develop to go, you know, hey, this is what I want to communicate to this individual. How can I come across in such a way that I can be understood? You know? So, you know, take all those considerations in mind.
Okay. Well, we'll go ahead and we'll try to grab one more question here. We're almost through the hour already, Karen.
We have to go to 2 hours. That's it.
We're going to have to move it later. Make it longer. Okay, this one's on cantering, and I'm not sure that you can answer this quickly, but we'll try it. It says, how do I teach my horse to canter on a line or offline in a round pen? He accelerates his trot and then may canter for just a couple beats. There's barely an instant to take the pressure off when he starts to canter, and then he's back to very fast trot again. Thanks, Jan and Bob.
Okay. A couple of things there. First one, make sure that the area is large enough. You know, we talked earlier about circles will shorten long horses, but they'll make short horses get really stuck. If you go into too small of a circle too early, it can be really physically demanding on horses. And that's why people say, well, don't circle young horses, because it's an unnatural direction. You know, it's not that it's bad, but, you know, what people tend to do is go out for 1 hour, you know, and circle, 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 and it puts too much torque, you know, on the limbs, especially in young horses, but in mature horses as well. So make sure that that area is a little bit bigger for the horse, number one. So make sure he's on a longer line. You know, I have people do things on the ground in the beginning on a 12-foot line. I don't suggest cantering on the 12-foot line until you're advanced. That's an advanced stage, okay? When most, it's like in dressage, the smaller the circles, and you get to 20-meter circles, that's one level of challenge. The higher level of challenge would be a 10-meter circle, okay? Because it's more difficult in the physiology for a horse to hold that. Okay, I want people to understand that first. Secondly, make sure that if you're seeing the horse really trying but they can't, have them checked out by a veterinarian, chiropractic. Check out and make sure, teeth is another reason the horse will not want to hold their posture. They have to hold a certain posture in different gaits and in different shapes in those gaits. So say we're on a circle, say in a round pen situation, or on a line. Sometimes horses, when they go into the canter, if they have a wave or a ramp, and dental care is much more than just knocking the points off. I like to mention that because dental care in the horse industry has greatly expanded in the last several years, probably 10, 15 years. And what we're finding is that horses' jaws, in order for them to turn, to make that turn, that lower jaw needs to move freely laterally for them to be able to turn their head. I've seen horses that are trying to go to one direction and they can't. So if you have a sense that the horse is really trying and can't, you know, have them checked out. It's really, I've done it myself, you know, thought, oh, my horse is just giving me fits, you know, and then I have it checked out. And, you know, I had one horse that, you know, when the equine dentist came out, he saw that there was a broken molar in the back. And I mean, it was split in two front to back, and the inside of it was up against the roof of the horse's mouth right next to a major artery. And I'll tell you what, I felt horrible. I felt horrible because, I mean, how many times do you just go in there and pull the tongue aside and look back in there and see that, you know, the horse is having a problem like that? So even a slight ramp or an incisor or a hook or something like that can be something that's causing the horse discomfort when he's doing it. If those things all check out and the horse is sound, because it could be something in a hip or hock or something like that, then the sequence that you're going to offer to the horse, whether you're online or offline, or even riding for that matter, is you're going to start with the slightest amount of pressure, gradually increasing the pressure until something touches them. Okay? So I've seen people do things in round pens. And one thing, I'm just going to mention something about round pens. Round pens are a tool. And I've seen a tendency of people overusing a round pen recently because it's kind of become, I don't want to say popular because bullpens have been around forever, certainly. But round penning somewhere along the line became a verb. Okay, round penning. And I don't necessarily agree with it if it's just, you know, used, again, kind of like spurs, without the education, the tool actually can work against you sometimes. So if I go along with a horse and I get effective to where that horse canters a couple of strides, again, leave him alone. But when the horse transitions down, I'm going to go through that sequence a little bit quicker and with more intensity each time until the horse starts realizing, gosh, my comfort is in the canter. And I want to choose to stay in the canter. But I might have to change my intensity enough so that the horse values the comfort, if that makes sense. So sometimes people think, oh, horsemanship for women, we sing kumbaya and braid their manes and things like that. But actually, most of the time, what I teach people is how to be effective. How would another horse have that horse cantering? How would a lead horse have that horse cantering? See? And that's where sometimes people say, oh, my horse, he just won't go. And I go, well, if you put him out with my horse, do you think he'd go? And they kind of go, well, no. And I go, okay, if you put him out with my mares, do you think he'd go then? And they kind of go, oh, yeah, all you got to say to somebody is mares. And they go, oh, yeah, he'd probably move for them. Okay? And if they don't, then the mares do what they need to do to cause the movement that they have in mind. They don't just sit there and go, oh, well, this horse doesn't move. Okay? But sometimes that's not pretty, or we think it's too much, or the horse isn't going to like us. And so we tend to hold back, especially as women. Physical contact is very uncomfortable for most women. So if you want to think about it, what would the mama horse do to say to the baby horse, you need to go, and not in a minute, I mean go now. So, you know, she wouldn't just sneak up and be unfair. She would have a posture of pressure. She'd snake her head, and then there would be teeth. Okay, and that's why I call that little bite there a mama's bite. Now, and if I need a horse to go, there might be two. If that horse, see, when horse A bites horse B, I usually ask people, you know, whose fault is it, but it's horse B's fault because they were still there when the teeth got there. But we don't tend to reflect on that, on horse interaction, and say, okay, how can I be more effective? The answer really is act more like another horse, and not just any horse, the lead horse. But again, when that horse goes, get back to the center and cross your arms or put your thumbs in your pocket and leave them alone. Because that's another reason horses will quit on you. Because, and I can't tell you how many times I see this, you know, a big dust storm going on in a round pen at, you know, about any facility I go to, and the horse is going, and that person is still walking and throwing ropes or spanking the ground. And, you know, to me, that's just peddling them again. And to me, it's insulting to an animal that's that intelligent, you know, to say, well, now I've got you going, now I got to keep you going, or you're going to stop. And that's where people get into the pattern we were talking about earlier, when you're riding and you're peddling them. Well, you know what? They can figure it out. They really can. And even if you go, well, then he's going to stop. Well, good. Because every time he stops, I get better at going through my sequence again. The horse gets better at recognizing and valuing the comfort in the sequence and being more clear and being better able to find the comfort, you see. But this is a process. It's not something like, okay, we'll go out and do A, B, and C, and you'll see rainbows and butterflies. It's all fixed. I want you to think about applying the type of pressure that another horse would. Make sure that there's nothing physical. If that horse is trying and not able to do it, you know, they'd still move from a mare, okay, but most big places have a geriatric pasture where they put the old guys out, you know, because they can't move the way, you know, that they would in a natural herd. And, you know, there's no old horses in the natural herd, because once those horses can't move or have the movement or the motion, nature takes them. You know, that's the law of nature. There's rules of man and laws of nature, but we keep horses, you know, in under different conditions. And so be sure to check out that it's not something physical, and then think in your mind, what would another horse do? And then make sure you keep your end of the deal. When the horse responds, you go back to the center, and it won't take long before the horse says, boy, what do I got to do to get that person to stand in the center and put their thumbs back in their pocket? Whatever I need to do that, do more of that, okay? But then don't let them sit there and canter around 14 times before you bring them in. Just maybe your goal at the beginning is just one lap and say, hey, man, that's great. We're done for the day. You look for your horse's best effort, and you just give them the appropriate reinforcement for the amount of effort that they gave you. And, again, just chip away at it. But it doesn't take long for a horse to understand it, because they already understand it from other horses. So hopefully that'll help you out with that.
Okay. All right, Jan, thanks for submitting that question. And we'll be glad to hear your results and things from that if you want to email us back. So, Karen, it's about 6 minutes till. Do you want to try to catch another one?
Yeah, let's do another. I can do it.
Let's do one more. Okay. This one will be, how can I improve my leadership skills in the saddle and prevent my horse from wanting to go back to the barn? When I'm on the ground, he is willing to go anywhere with me. When I mount and attempt to ride away, the communication changes. It changes even more when I change from using the halter and a lead rope as my reins and go to a bridle. What am I missing?
Okay. The common term for this is called barn sour. But it's interesting, if you think about it, they're actually sweet on the barn. They're not sour on the barn. They're sweet on the barn, and they're sour on what we're asking them to do. I believe that the reason horses go with us and follow us, you know, on the ground, is because, number one, we do it a lot. Okay, so it's something that they're very familiar. They learn from a very young age that when you see the backside of a human, you know, and there's a rope there and there's pressure, just, you know, stay with that human and life is good. So it's something that they're extremely familiar with even from a young age, most horses, not all. And the other thing is that horses are conditioned by nature to follow the behind of the creature in front of them. And that's why when people are even leading horses, you know, the horse will stop in their tracks and they turn around and face them. And I said, that's not what a lead horse looks like. That lead horse, she doesn't look back and go, come on, you guys, and tug on their head. She just keeps going. And the horse learns to stay inside of that pressure. But I want you to think of why, because I hear this all the time, and I've done it myself. I had trouble, you know, back in the old days, I'd have trouble, you know, having the horse cross a little bit of water. It won't go across, and I'll step down and lead it. That horse will pull. I step across. Next thing I know, I look back, and here's this horse, you know, jumping with, you know, I'm looking at the belly button, you know, and then I hear, you know, I just close my eyes, and I can't believe, I'm still alive, you know, that kind of a thing. So it's human nature to want to lead the horse, and it's the horse's nature to want to follow. Now, when we get up onto the horse's back, we're in a different position. But the same thing applies. So, again, we're tapping into the desire of the horse. Now, I'll give you a little task that you can fiddle with. It's really fun to do with the horse. If you think of, okay, why does the horse want to go back to the barn? Why doesn't he want to go out? Number one motivator with horses is comfort. Number two is food. Most people will disagree. They'll say, oh, no, my horse is totally motivated by food. Well, it can be, but I'll tell you what, if a horse feel threatened, they're not going to go and feel threatened. I'll give you an example. A burning barn. Everybody's heard the story. The horses are turned loose. The barn's on fire. They don't run back because they left hay in there. They run back in there because that's where their perceived comfort is. It's what they're familiar with. Okay? They didn't go, oh, I left some grain in there. They're not running in there to get the food. That's where their comfort is perceived to be. So comfort is number one, food is number two. So here's what I like to do with horses that are very extreme like this. And again, you need to assess yourself, your riding ability, all these kind of things. But what I like to do, probably one of the most extreme cases was a horse, was a little gated horse, and the woman, you know, knowing what she knew, you know, there's no criticism or anything, but this was the pattern that she and the horse had. She would get the horse to hold still just enough that she could get on, okay? And that took a little while because this horse was ready to go before she even sat in the saddle. As soon as that horse felt weight in the saddle, it was going off paka, paka, paka down the road. And the woman would ride this horse out on trails, you know, paka, 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 this little gated horse, and you know, the wind blowing back in her hair, sitting there, she could still drink a soda pop, you know, on her gated horse. Beautiful ride. Come back, and that horse did not slow until it went, parked at the hitching rail, and she'd get off. Okay? So this horse would go out. He almost had a watch on, because he'd go out about 30, 40 minutes, and then he kind of knew that's about as long as this ride was going to be. He'd turn around and come back, and she'd go, okay, well, you know, she kind of noticed he was coming back on his own, but didn't, you know, that's a fight, and we're out here, you know, not going to cause any problems. So that's the pattern they had for years. This wasn't like for weeks, this was for years. So this was probably one of the most extreme cases to give you the example of. So I said, okay, I'm going to change this horse's mind about wanting to be home versus out on the trail. And it was in the desert in the wintertime, in Phoenix area, and in the desert, in the wintertime, we get this desert grass. It's really sweet. The horses just love it. It's just really, really nice. And not real lush, you know, it's desert grass, but, you know, cattle graze on it, and it's, you know, has a lot of nutrition, but it's really sweet to the horses. And so what I did, and I didn't get very far the first day, I am not exaggerating, I just rode him out just across the street. I stopped him, and I cued him with pressure on his mane to lower his head. And I had taught him this on the ground. And this wasn't our first ride. This, we had kind of a project going on with this horse. But at this stage, this is what I did with him. So I cued him to put his head down, and he couldn't believe that he could eat grass, number one. He was just like, oh, no, I'm going to get in trouble if I put my nose anywhere near. And I said, nope. And it actually took a little while for him to realize that he could have a little nibble of grass. Well, he popped his head up and said, I got to go home. Now, we're not very far. I mean, I could at the stone throwaway. And he turned around and he said, I've got to go back to the facility. And I said, great, me too. So he goes back. Now, I did this without a bunch of people around, had good footing. You know, it's all dirt footing. You know, it was okay. You know, the whole scenario. So, again, you have to consider it. And he went back, and I said, great, here we are. Now, let's go, paka, 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 paka. And I rode him all up and down these, you know, the big aisles, these big wide aisles. I mean, you could drive vehicles through it, around the arena. We rode around the outside of the arena. We rode. And I went right back across the street to that sweet grass and asked him to put his head down in that grass again. And he took he finally got another little nibble, and then he just popped his head up and said, I got to go home. I go, me too. And off we went. And pretty soon he started realizing, we go back to the facility, and that's not my happy place where I'm going to park you at the hitching rail and you're going to get off. Give me my buck of grain, you know, that's where the hard stuff's going to be, and out there across the street is where my happy place is. Okay, so I started changing his mind. It was set up just perfect, and this horse really needed that program, that part of that program, to that extent. And pretty soon he started, if you can imagine, that horse is now jigging to take you out on the trail and dragging your feet to come home. Because when you get home, that might be when you go in the arena or the round pen and do the more demanding things. See, we don't realize what we're doing with a horse is actually forming that horse's opinion and resulting in these behaviors. So if you start thinking about things from the horse's point of view and start kind of reversing some of your routines and get out of those routines or adopt a new routine, it really doesn't take that long relative to the background. Like I said, this is probably one of the most extensive projects that I had, but it did not take, relative to how long that horse had been doing it, it did not take that long before I could ride that horse out on a loose rein, out and back. I mean, riding, that was our goal with this horse, is that you could ride him on a loose rein like an old cow pony. And it eventually happened. And believe me, it was extensive. You know, I went through everything I knew in the book to change that horse's mind. But that's all that horse knew for his entire life, his entire life. And so to recondition that, to give him a new thought and a new idea, it happened. It happened, but the reason it happened is because the owner believed in me. And I really want to compliment that owner. I did many times, because there's not many people who see the process and really trust that lasting result, what I'm describing, riding that horse like an old cow pony, that horse could ever do that. Because the belief system was so strong that this is just how this horse is. Well, it's how that horse is because of the patterning of behavior from the human environment that that horse has been exposed to. So to me, that was a very rewarding experience, and I really appreciated the opportunity to have a horse like that to that extent. But even that horse to that extent, eventually, and it was so funny to see these new ideas pop up in his mind, like, really? Really? We're going to go out and go a little further and a little further and a little further, until pretty soon that horse, wherever I went, that horse wanted to be with me, because that horse knew that where I was, wherever I was the best place for him. But that took a lot of changing in his mind, because he just said, okay, I feel weight in the saddle and off we go, and my happy place isn't until we park at the hitching rail and get my grain and brushing and, you know, put back in my stall. So those are some things to think about. You probably won't have that kind of an extensive project on your hands, but even, I want to give you that example, because even that extensive of a project, you know, didn't just come good. I mean, it was absolutely phenomenal. I mean, it could not have, probably one of the top five most extreme changes over time with that horse in many different ways. I thought I'd dedicate an entire book, you know, just to that particular project horse. because it was just the horse that nobody really believed could be any different because he never had been. But it didn't mean that he couldn't find a new way of experiencing, you know, this human world. And he absolutely did. I'm really, really grateful that I had that experience with that horse.
Okay. Well, Karen, it's after 9. I can't believe it. So we'll have to probably pick up this next question next month. So we'll start out with that one next month, and that would be under micromanagement. And please keep your questions coming, and we'll get to those as soon as we can. Karen, do you have anything you want to close with at all?
No, I just really enjoy doing the teleseminars, and I'm so glad I get wonderful feedback. You know, please write in. You know, sometimes people think, oh, well, Karen's not going to see my email. I read all the emails. I enjoy, you know, seeing that people are getting the results. You know, sometimes people, I think they don't listen to the teleseminar because they go, oh, what can that really help? And, you know, I get a lot of emails of people that say, you know what, I listened to it. It wasn't my question, but I had that problem or my friend did. And we tried what you said, and it was really effective. And I'm just so glad to be able to offer, you know, my perspective and the type of explanation that you can really be able to go and get the kind of result you're looking for, even if you don't believe that it's possible. Other people go, I didn't think it would work, but I'll be darned, that thing really did work. And the only thing that's even better than this is watching the, you know, go online and look at the new DVDs, open the email and open that little PDF file and go online and you can read the back of the covers and it'll give you, you know, more in-depth description about each of those types of behaviors. And I promise that we will be getting more and more of these behaviors captured on videos. My idea, my vision is to have a very extensive library so that people can come in and sort through it. It's like any library. You'd go in and find, you know, that information that you're needing at the time and be able to come back and get, you know, a different perspective and a different information on different subjects, you know, as much as you need. So I'm really glad to have the opportunity to help people with these challenges because when you know what to do, you're able to do it. You really are. Don't sit back and think, oh, I can't do it. What if I do it wrong? You know what? So what? Get over it. Just go try. If you'll try, if you'll make the effort, I will support you 100% all the way. So good luck to everybody, and keep sending in questions. I really enjoy it. You can kind of tell just a little bit.
Yeah. Well, Karen, we appreciate all the time that you put into everything and the time that you give us, and we look forward to talking to you next month. So I guess we'll go ahead and tell everybody thanks for joining us tonight, and please tune in next month and keep the questions coming. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you, Melinda. Have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.